What's your reaction to this? NIL money for student athletes is good or bad?
I think it's good. Gut reaction.
Ha! You are a contrarian.
I think it's good.
Why?
Because the majority of collegiate athletes are never given the opportunity to go pro and make generational wealth, so they should be able to capitalize on their current athletic dreams.
Okay, I agree with that. Do you think that the way it's being done is right?
I think there's a lot of stuff that needs to be... It's really making the job of coaching and recruiting a lot more difficult and finding out who... You know, really wants to be a part of your program versus who's trying to make a buck. I think it's complicated in that way. Truth be told, I would assume, like anything else, it needs probably a couple tune-ups here and there. I'm not sure exactly what those would be, though.
I would say that, first of all, you've got to narrow the window on the portal. A kid can't just go school to school to school. Unless the coach quits, then the student, I think, should be obligated to 2 years of quote-unquote service, particularly since... You don't like that word, do you?
No, I think that that's fair. Having certain thresholds to meet before a player can be like, I don't want to play for you anymore.
I mean, if you're getting money and you're getting an education, room and board, or some measure of that, then what should we expect in return? And I think in order to build a program, we'd like you to at least be here for 2 years. I know so many instances where a program just can't get over the hump because as soon as they get a good kid on the football, baseball, basketball team, whatever, that kid goes to a better conference or a bigger, better school. I know of my son played baseball at Butler, and I'm not sure I'm telling this story correctly, but they had a really good outfielder who would be one of those kids you could build a program around. And then another school out east gave him a measure of money that was somewhere around six figures. And the kid said, what am I, stupid? I'm going to go to that school now. And so there goes the baseball program at this whole other university because one of the marquee kids is gone for more money because the one school doesn't have the cash and the other does. What are we doing here, you know?
I do think that that is an unfortunate part of the process, but at the same time, you know, I just think back to what would you do if you were in a professional career, too, if you have an opportunity to go to an opportunity that's going to better fit your situation.
If I'm the kid, I take the money every time.
Yeah, and I think that that speaks to the point of they need to be given those opportunities. And I think it does stink for those programs. It's not going to be a perfect system, but you do have to side with the student athlete in that situation because that's what you have to do in today's world. You got to make the most money that you can.
The NCAA has reached an agreement, though, to pay not only the kid to not only have a cap, a salary cap, if you will, at the schools, but they also make it retroactive to student athletes that goes back, I think, to 2016. Talking about NIL right now. By the way, according to Armchair Alumni in an online story last summer, according to multiple sources, the Fighting Illini, the University of Illinois, of course, in Champaign-Urbana, ranked 10th in the nation in NIL funding. Number one, Arkansas. Two, Kansas. BYU, Kentucky, Indiana, Kansas State, Baylor, Louisville, Alabama, and Illinois. I wonder why Duke and North Carolina aren't on that list. Maybe because they don't need to be. These are all big programs that are fighting it out in big conferences, so perhaps that's it.
Smaller football programs, too.
And also proof that they do have alumni that are willing to give. Let's talk a little bit with Cameron Cox right now, the Assistant Athletic Director, or Director of Athletics and Strategic Initiatives at the U of I. Cameron, welcome back. I hope you've been good.
Hey, John. I'm glad to be back. I've been great. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Does that sound about right to you? Number 10 in the country, NIL for basketball at Illinois?
Well, I admit I kind of smirked when I heard you saying that. I'll say that I wouldn't put too much stock in those kinds of reports. It's a bit of a black box, to be honest.
You mean not everybody knows how much money everybody has?
Yeah, I would say that no one knows how much money anyone else has. It's been a bit of an ongoing story for a bunch of journalists across the country who have really tried to dig into this issue, but there's some stuff around the way that student-athletes disclose this information and different state laws that make it where it's basically impossible to figure out reliably how much money other folks have. And so I see those kind of stories every so often, and I always kind of get a kick out of them.
It's interesting because it does cite multiple sources, but it did make it sound like this is sort of then a ranking or rating without any hard data. So if I understand correctly, then the schools or athletes don't have to report to some national database who's paying whom how much?
That's correct. So they do have to report to the institutions, but they don't have to report that to any sort of a national database. And so there's really no single repository that has all that stuff. And the disclosure process also, there's now a little bit more teeth to it. But there have been issues with, believe it or not, getting young people to do something for years. And so a lot of times student-athletes don't disclose. So that's the other part, too. So it's very, very difficult to figure that out. I wouldn't put too much stock in it.
But the university knows how much their students are getting, or they don't?
Not necessarily. It depends. I think different schools vary because it depends on really whether their student-athletes disclose and whether their disclosure mechanisms are actually like reliable, because sometimes the student athletes might disclose, sometimes they may not. And then also, like, even if they don't disclose, the universities may have another means of figuring out how much money some of the student athletes are making, but not other ones. So the whole thing is kind of a wash. I will say there have been a couple of times where through some kind of creative journalism, there have been a few different outlets where I would say they probably did have reliable information on one school, but no one's actually put all that stuff together.
Because it's not the university per se giving the kids money, but essentially a booster organization associated with the school that works in concert with what the coach wants. But since it's not the university giving the money, the university doesn't have a hard number on that. Is that right?
I would say you probably got about a B on that. But the gist of it is right. Like, the university is not the one paying. So NIL money is third-party work for third-party compensation. And the third party is kind of ultimately who's in charge of that. The student-athletes are required to disclose it, but the means of disclosure is so kind of disjointed across the country that it's impossible to really compare apples to apples.
Cameron, the reason we asked you back, and we very much enjoyed our conversation with you a year ago or so when this was working its way through the system, is now there is a settlement coming up in April, and I wanted to ask you a little bit about that. But before I do, can you answer this question? How much NIL money does Illinois give its athletes?
Well, that one's easy. None, because we won't be able to NIL contract.
How about this? How much money do University of Illinois athletes get in name, image, and likeness? How much do your student-athletes get, even if you're not the one giving it to them? Do you know how much the basketball team gets in NIL?
I do have a good sense, but I won't share it. I think it's a part of our competitive advantage. So that's the other part, too, is that oftentimes the people who do know are not willing to be forthcoming about it because it's a part of their competitive advantage. So that's a big piece, too.
It's interesting. In the pros, we all know what the big-time athletes get, and then they use that against their teams because maybe I had a better season at shortstop than the Dodgers shortstop got, so I should get paid more. Maybe that's happening anyway, but is that the reason that you all guard those numbers?
I wouldn't say that we necessarily actively guard them, but I think a lot of it is because you don't really know what's going on at the other places. Like, if you're right, in the pros it's a little bit different, one, because they have the cap and the PA and everything else, so like it's just the structure of it is different. But two, there's a sense that, well, I don't have any issue disclosing, because me disclosing what goes on in, say, you know, if I work for the Cubs, me disclosing what's going on with the Cubs is kind of a part of the price that I pay to figure out what's going on with, you know, the Sox or the Cardinals or whoever else. Here, it's not clear that anyone is disclosing reliable information. And so you're like, well, I don't know that I want to be the one to disclose reliable information. You maybe end up giving up a competitive advantage for nothing in exchange there. But I think that's a part of where we're going in our discussion, because eventually there'll be a much better and more transparent system around some of this stuff. And there's also going to be likely a greater competitive parity.
This is WGN. John Williams here with Cameron Cox, Assistant Director of Athletics and Strategic Initiatives at the University of Illinois. He talks to us about NIL. Overall, do you think NIL is good for college sports, or has it been good for the U of I, Cameron?
Yeah, I think it's definitely been good for college sports and good for the U of I. I think I'll answer the first and the second. I think in college sports, our main mission is to serve student athletes, and I think this is a new benefit that can be provided to student athletes. And I think it also gives our fans that we serve an opportunity to kind of get involved. We talk about kind of this last few years of the collective era has given fans a new opportunity to really impact what's going on the field or on the court. But I'll also say I think that it's overall just a good thing because it has forced us to really think more creatively about what the student-athlete experience should be and how to modernize the student-athlete experience in the context of what we're dealing with on the commercial side.
Right. So, I think a lot of us think that some of the kids are working harder than just a college scholarship or a partial scholarship.
Sure.
And some of them are such standouts that everybody's making money but them. So I get that. But then what do you think of this April deadline and settlement amount of $22 million per school? What's the U of I's position on that?
So it's really interesting. We're excited about it. I'll say that any type of disruption is also an opportunity. This is the most intense period of disruption probably in the history of college athletics, but definitely in the past several decades. And so we're excited. We see it as an opportunity. I'll say I'll walk you through it a little bit. So on April 7th, what we're anticipating is that the results of a negotiated settlement between kind of the NCAA, the big conferences, and then the lead plaintiffs council is going to be certified. And kind of the biggest part of that, or the part that's getting the most attention, has to do with an NIL revenue sharing cap. And so what will happen is that institutions are going to have the opportunity to purchase NIL rights of their student athletes in an aggregate amount of $20.5 million. And that amount will go up a little bit every year. Now, the reason that you were going back to the 22 over and over was because that is actually the foundation of the 20.5. So the $20.5 million ties to basically 22% of the aggregate of the commercial-type revenues that the schools and the power conferences generated last year. So you say, well, it's going to be a revenue share. Well, how much of a revenue share? Well, it's a 22% revenue share for the certain types of revenues. That number corresponds to the $20.5 million, with the idea being it'll go up a little bit every year. So that's kind of how it works. I'll say, the interesting bit is that this whole settlement is the result of a class action antitrust suit. And so it's all about making sure that we can allow for greater market competition around student-athlete benefits. So the NCAA has not provided much additional guidance in the way that the $20.5 million should be divvied up. So it's going to be up to every school to decide how they want to do that. So some schools may decide that they want to support more sports to a greater degree than others. Some schools may decide they want to support fewer sports. Some schools may decide they want to distribute money within the sports to a smaller number of student athletes, greater number of student athletes, whatever it is.
So will all of the coaches? So will all the coaches go to the athletic director and say, "All right, say we got $22 million this year. I need $1 million for the quarterback, and I've got a shooting guard that's worth $500,000 in the open market in college right now. Are you all going to negotiate for the amount of money total?"
I think if I understand your question right, I think the short of it is, yeah, the idea is that, well, each school has to say, well, if we sponsor football like we do at Illinois and we sponsor men's basketball like we do at Illinois, then we have to decide as between
how you're going to spend your money.
Correct. How you're going to spend your money. And so all of it becomes really complex because even then, once you decide, all right, between these two programs is how we're going to spend it, then it becomes a question of, okay, well, within the programs, how are you going to spend
Absolutely.
It?
Absolutely. Let me ask you this. Are the women going to get some of the money, or is it possible they won't get any? The track team will get zero money because it doesn't generate revenue. I mean, will you have complete free rein to spend it any way you want?
Well, it depends. I'll say the parameters of Title IX always apply, but how they apply to this new space is really unclear. In a space for a while where we had no guidance, and then we had some really short-term guidance in the waning days of the Biden administration, and then that guidance was actually rescinded by the Trump administration. So we're not sure, but again, every school is going to do it a little bit differently. So that's I expect that the proper way to do that is going to end up being one of the lingering questions even after the settlement is hopefully ultimately certified.
I'm out of time today, Cameron. It's just so interesting to talk to you. I so appreciate you kind of giving us as good a peek inside as you can. I'm going to call you again end of this month or sometime next month. Let's continue this conversation, all right?
We'll do it again soon, John. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Cameron. Cameron Cox is the Assistant Director of Athletics and Strategic Initiatives at the U of I.